Radio Show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision Radio Show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear. Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Vision radio show. I hope my sound's okay. I got a negative comment about my microphone, so I've changed it. Hopefully, this will sound better. Today is Wednesday, September 28th. Can you believe it? We are almost done with 2016. It's 8 o'clock in the morning, Pacific Standard Time. And on Wednesdays, as you know, I interview activists and healers and people who are really changing their own personal lives to help change and save our planet. Today, I have on the phone with us two guests, so I'm super excited, and they are co-directors with me in the No Nukes Northwest. We have Mimi Gurman and Heidi Lambert. So, hi, you guys. Thanks for joining me.
Hey. Good morning. Hey.
So, I want to ask you first off, let's tell everybody a little bit about No Nukes Northwest. Why don't either one of you guys explain to them what it is and what's the current action that No Nukes Northwest is working on and how they can get in touch with us on Facebook?
Heidi, roll with it.
You want me to roll with it? So, yeah. It bloomed out of Occupy Portland. Miriam and I met each other there. And I remember being in a cafe, like a dinner for Occupy people at a church, and Miriam was there, and she actually played music. And we were there talking about, you know, like the real issues that were really bothering us, and nuclear power was one of mine, and it was one of hers. And she had a whole different take on it because she was from the East Coast. And I was from Eastern Washington, and we clicked right off the bat, really passionate about it. And I truly believe that's when it started, Miriam, because pretty much right after that, we started planning an action called A15 at Hanford.
Say that again. What was it?
We started planning an event called A15, and it was on April 15th at Hanford, and we brought in a ton of protesters and activists and speakers.
That was when you had Helen Caldicott.
That's right.
I was so upset because April 15th is the one day I cannot participate.
Well, you know what happened? Actually, Lonnie, April 15th, Tax Day, was an interesting day up there because they had this whole libertarian. We were in the main park in Richland, which is ground zero for all of the Hanford contractor buildings. So it was super, super ballsy of us to do this event right smack central of Bechtel, URS, every single contractor. We were in their front yard doing this thing. But anyway, the same day, that morning, while we were setting up, the libertarians were there. And the, I forget his name, he's the, one of the, or maybe the, I'm not sure how many, there's a Republican senator from Eastern Washington, and he was there. And I went over to him, and I talked to some of the libertarians that morning, and I said, you guys should stay, because it's hard for us to find things in common with each other. And we started to talk to them about how much money is wasted going down the drain for this Hanford cleanup, you know, and that they should also be with us and be against the waste that's happening there and be pro cleanup in a whole different kind of way, you know. So they were fascinated, and a bunch of them stayed. And in the meantime, when this Republican senator came by that day, I made sure I went over to him and I was like, dude, it's so great that you're here. And I shook his hand and I wouldn't let go of his hand. And I said, now that you and I are talking, I want you to go back into the Senate, and I want you to get, you know, make this right. Make these contractors deal with what they say they're going to do. And he realized that I was not a friend to him, and I wouldn't let go of his hand. And his, like, I don't know, whatever they are, his bodyguard people finally came over and said, that's enough. He's got to go. You know, but that was the start of A15 that day, man. That was wild.
Well, you know, one of the things we were talking about before we came on the air is the fact that we, you know, the nuclear industry is really essentially allowed to just murder people. And this is going on in conjunction where we're watching police officers just shoot unarmed people. And we're about to watch the city of Portland give boatloads of money to the police, we assume, to militarize, correct, Mimi?
Yeah, give them a raise and militarize them.
Yeah, so this is the thing all across our country, and this is the stunning thing. This is why I actively was willing to participate in really getting No Nukes Northwest to be a true nonprofit, because there are ways to take action, and the way to really take good collective action is through a nonprofit sector. And Mimi came up with a freaking fabulous idea to really help us identify a no nuke zone, at least in Portland. So, Mimi, why don't you explain the first project of the formalized No Nukes Northwest.org organization?
Well, the first project for us right now is, it's funny to call it the first project, but right, the first project since we've been a nonprofit for days now, is to work collectively with, it's called Hazelnut Grove, which is I hesitate to call it a homeless camp because the people who are in it are no longer homeless. They have temporary housing in this space. And right next to the space is, it's a little bit of land that has been worked. It's beautiful land. And we have the ability now to take over that land and create more food than was already growing there, and have the community of Hazelnut Grove go out into low-income communities and feed those communities. So instead of having this be like we hear all the time, oh, you know, the rich people are going to help the poor people, and of course that never happens. We understand community as a whole different thing, which is we take care of each other. So I brought this idea to them that Hazelnut Grove feeds the people. So I'm helping them out with the farm. I'm participating in the farm. Anybody can come. All volunteers can come participate in the farm. And in the process, we are creating in this community the first no nukes zone in Portland, which we tried to do with city council in 2012 and 2013 by having them pass a resolution calling Portland a nuke-free zone, which they wouldn't do. And we tried really hard for a very long time. So the fact that we're able to do this now and have the first nuke-free zone is something. And what we're doing with that to make it so, aside from just calling it so, we're testing the soil. And No Nukes Northwest and Radcast will have the soil samples tested for radiation. We'll have the levels posted of what is in the soil. And we're just moving forward from there with community helping community, which is what all of this is about.
You know, one of the questions I have, and I don't know if we can actually get this answer, but I wonder if we actually have a legal right to say, we declare this a nuclear-free zone, we have a right to nuclear-free land. If we test our land and it turns out to be radioactive, can we take any legal action on that one? That's something that I really want to explore as we move forward with the project, because at this point, it seems to me that all of us across the entire world, since the nuclear industry was invented, is we have had to accept death as part of them insisting they want these weapons. They want the weapons to kill people, but we have to accept that we're going to die so they can build their weapons. I mean, the insanity, the murder, to me, the nuclear industry is nothing but murders. And I was dumbfounded to hear Hillary Clinton say, we need, of course, she would say that because she is a murderer, but I don't know what it's going to take for Americans to realize that we do not have to accept nuclear death. We do not, we can reject the Disney version of the world.
Well, the reality is that, you know, starting with what you first propositioned as far as, you know, having a legal case, we, the people, have a right to all land, really. It is our land. The concept that there's ownership of land is part of the facade that we use with corporate talk, with money talk. And so we all believe that that is the way of it. The way that Hazelnut Grove got that land is they took the land. They went there and took it and said, we're not leaving. We're making something of it. Fuck you if you think you're going to come in here and move us. See what happens if you do that.
Who were they? Who were they that did that?
Two people started this. It's Jose started it and Joe Benny started it. And
was it like government land or private land?
City land. Yep.
It's a trust, though. It's a trust, isn't it?
No, the farm is a trust. But where Hazelnut Grove is, which is why all attention should be on Hazelnut Grove. Fuck the presidential bullshit that's going on right now. That's just such fucking bullshit that teaches us absolutely nothing and is a waste of all possible time. People should be looking at how people come together like they did at Hazelnut Grove, took this land from the city, said, hey, man, you cannot remove us. This is public land, and we are the fucking public, and look what we're going to do to this land. We're going to provide everything for ourselves, for 28 people on this land, that no one else can provide for us. So if you think you're going to come in here and take that from us, you got another fucking thing coming. And that's exactly what happened. And the space that they've created for themselves and the housing that's going up in this property that they took over because it's our land, no need for a lawsuit. Again, the paradigm, we have to remember who we are, you know? We aren't subservient to anybody, nobody, no corporation, nothing, no bank, fucking nothing. We just take the power that we inherently have by the right of breathing and do what we need to do. And that's community. And that's what Hazelnut Grove is doing. And that's what so many people in our communities are starting to take part in. And learn how to do. And this is where we're at.
I think that's probably why the government's going to be giving millions of dollars to the police department, because they know people are about to start doing this.
Well, this is all about refugees, right? This isn't about homeless. We need to change the word. These are refugees. These are people who either got thrown out of their homes due to rent, or had something terrible, have lost their jobs, or, you know, have perhaps mental illness that is making it just too difficult for them to deal. Whatever the situation is, these are refugees, man. We don't need to be looking at Syria and, you know, all across the world for, you know, who's coming into our country. Let's look here, man, and see how we're dealing with refugees that we are creating and our city is creating. And, yeah, the more refugees we have, the more money's going to go into the police state. Absolutely.
Well, look what this report said this morning. 1 of 10 veterans are homeless. That is a national disgrace. National disgrace. 1 in 10. And yet many of those veterans have all been exposed to nuclear pollution. Many, many, many of them have severe problems that are minimally being handled. Minimally. The neglect and negligence. Really, honestly, I called yesterday a congressman in Washington, McDermott, because he was standing up arguing for the mandate, you know, that penalty if people don't get health insurance. He was standing up saying, we need this mandate to keep the ACA strong. And I called him. I said, you know, this is what's wrong with our country. And people are actually very afraid to get out, like, many of our listeners will make comments about how great they think this is, and yet the most they do is comment on YouTube videos or listen or call in. You know, you, Miriam, and both of you take action. Like, you create community activism. You go to community activism. You talk about it. I mean, I think the hardest part is, where do we begin? The essence of all of this is so, it's so pervasive, like it's so deep. People feel like they just can't make a difference, so they just don't.
Well, I think that that's true, Lonnie, but I also think that people are afraid. You know, they're afraid that if they go and stand in front of a fence and don't let the car through, that they're going to go to jail. They're afraid they're not going to be able to go to their job. You know, there's been so many consequences, at least for me growing up in the Tri-Cities. You can't protest. Like, there's like one protester I know. Actually, I knew two protesters in the Tri-Cities, and one of them just passed away. You know, it's and she was a awesome Grateful Dead following midwifing hippie, you know what I mean? And even for her, it was very difficult for her to protest against Hanford because so many of her clients were parents who had some, you know, a father who worked at Hanford or the mother worked at Hanford or whatever, and those were her clients. So I think that's the other thing about protesting is that there is this conversation about who has the right to protest. If you're getting paid to play on an NFL game, are you allowed to have an opinion, or are you just a puppet player for that team that pays you? You know, and that's something that I had to come through in my life. At some point, I had to say, I can't live like this. I don't want the mansion. I don't want the salary. If it means that I have to live in denial and pretend like the world isn't like this, then I'm not going to do that. I'm going to give it up. And, you know, some of my good friends who inspire me, one of them is Jesse Spoonberg, who slept last night on Portland City Hall stairs. He had a sleeping bag outside and slept on the stairs. And he didn't do it alone. Other people came. There was music, there was food, and there was happiness. But from afar, you would think, oh, my God, those people are going to get arrested. They're going to get raided. They're going to get beat by the cops. They could maybe die. They might be shot tonight. I mean, that was things that I thought about when I went to bed last night, was please do not let my friends get shot for protesting the injustices that are going on in the world. You know, that's, to me, that's the biggest problem, is this fear that is so ingrained in our society that we can't speak out. And that's where I'm at. Like, we need to influence each other.
That is completely right. You really, really bring it home, because really there's intimidation with your workforce also. Like, if you say something, I mean, you know, I have a unique job because people want me to do their work, right? I mean, it's an odd thing, but most of them, like, I can't discuss many of them. I have a client who lives right next door to Zion Nuclear Power Plant, which is closed down but leaking, and both of her children have neurological problems. And right. I sent her some information on Zion, and she was like, look, we are not in a position, you know, I get what you're saying, but we're not moving. Phil has his job here. We can cope with this medically, and there is nothing we can do, so I'd rather not discuss it. Which was a really sweet way for her to put it, but honestly, like, I'm in this, like, I've been going through this, like, come to Jesus moment over the last year, trying to figure out, How can people really motivate themselves to come out? And maybe it is that corporate pressure to just sit down and shut up, or you're going to lose your job. I mean, that's a lot of what happens, I think, in St. Louis. People work for Republic Services. People work for the EPA. That's their community, so they're working for the people that are offending them. They don't really have a choice, they feel. So it's kind of, and they can't save their city.
It's so deep, Lonnie, because, I mean, it goes into just the whole whistleblowing reality. I mean, really, if you're really going to talk about it, I mean, in the Tri-Cities, you have scientists who know that what they're doing isn't going to work or is hurting people or is wrong, and they go to their management and they say, hey, you know, this design isn't going to work, and this is the reasons why. And they say, shut up. We already have so many millions of dollars or, you know, billions of dollars invested in this. You can't change the plan. And shut up, you know, and if you don't shut up, you're going to lose your job. And then when they still speak out, then their jobs get put into a basement of a building, you know, and they become, you know, filers or, you know, crazy jobs where they don't have a voice. They take the voice. They literally do take the voice away. And that is true also with our police force. This whole 40-hour business where they get 48 hours after they shoot someone to not talk to the public, but right, they can talk to each other.
To create the story. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they create the story, and so it is. It's just this, and people...
Explain that again, because I had not heard that until just a few minutes ago.
You want to explain it, Miriam?
Yeah, sure. So there's a 48-hour rule where when a cop shoots somebody, they have their rights, the cop's rights, are that they don't have to talk to anybody for 48 hours. So nobody gets to see the video if there is a video. And during that 48 hours, what the fuck are they doing with that video, right? I mean, like, these people know how to edit. Then during that 48 hours, they get to talk to the other officers, supposedly not, but, you know, yeah, they talk to each other to get the story straight, the fake story straight on, you know, who put what where and when, because, of course, you know, most of the people who are getting killed now, murdered by the cops, don't have guns, don't have knives, don't have shit, and they're 11 years old, you know. And so they get their story straight in this 48 hours. They get the legal representation for themselves. They get the union backing them. The union is the strong, the police union is the strongest union in the United States. You know, I mean, this shit is powerful. And they don't have to talk to anyone. So what's happening now is there was a deal made, which is supposed to be signed this morning at 9:30, where if we want the 48-hour rule to go away, The cops wanted a raise because other cops in different cities get more money than our cops do, and also that they want money for more artillery, more shielding, more weaponry, more, you know, state of war. So that's what's going on here right now. But I wanted to say something though, Hyde, that what Heidi's saying about whistleblowing, it's pervasive. We have an article that just came out like a few days ago by a professor in the UK, Peter Wadhams, and he's a scientist, and he was saying that his whole article, it's called Scientists Are Too Frightened to Tell the Truth on Climate Impacts. And he goes into depth in this article. It's a great article.
Where is it at? Tell me.
Well, let's see here. If you go to, I'll just give you one place to go to for it because you can. Go to, on Facebook, go to Guy McPherson. It's McPherson. And you'll see the articles there because everybody's talking about this. And Guy is a person who's, he's a professor who's been talking about this forever and has lost everything because he needed to tell the truth about climate. And so that's what he does. And really, his life has just, like, what a difficult thing to do, to bring this message to the people of what's actually happening. And Peter Wadhams, this whole article is about calling out the science community for protecting their grants, protecting their universities. The universities protecting the universities by getting rid of professors like Guy, who are going to tell the truth. I mean, like I said, this is pervasive. It's not just in cops. It's not just in the nuclear industry. It's everywhere. It's in science. It's in medicine. It's in pharmaceuticals. It's in big ag. It's fucking everywhere, man. And so if we don't figure out how to, for the time that we have left, how to be in a community that works for each other, does not depend on systems that are going to collapse, so that we have at least something to get by with in that process before, you know, the sixth extinction actually completes itself, we're just fucked that much sooner, you know? And we're certainly fucked. We think that anyone out there other than people who are really working together to try to at least elongate some form of loving and living in harmony with whatever is left in our garden, if we don't do that, we have absolutely nothing.
Well, besides that, if we don't do that, then there really is no possibility of saving any shred of humanity. Like, you know, we're in this sixth extinction event. That's what they say that we are, and we are. The signs are very clear. And this idiocracy that we're living, where there's just complete denial about the harm that every industry is causing our planet. You know, if we start facing it, and this is what I say, we can create solutions. The point of facing this with love and honor is to create solutions, not to just go, oh my God, the world's over, we're screwed. It's really just to face it, because if we have a shred of chance of humanity being alive in 300 years or maybe even 100 years, it's only going to come when we stop this insanity. I feel like we are living in Rome burning.
I just have to say, Lonnie, because I always say this when you say that, that just for clarity, for, you know, my who I am, I don't believe that we will get through this. I believe in the science that Guy is presenting us and that Peter Wadhams is presenting us, and that much sooner than later.
But you know what? I also am a person who was told when I was 37 years old, I had very severe arthritis. There was nothing I could do about it. And it was based on science. And I know that a lot of the, quote, science that we have has been very limited by the point of view of driving us off the freaking cliff. I think there are solutions and answers that have not even been looked at. And I'm not saying we will find an answer, but if there's a chance in hell of doing it, it's going to come out of real science and real information in facing the gravity of the situation that Guy McPherson is talking about. This article, I just pulled it up, the article about scientists too afraid to tell the truth. It really does speak to everything that is driving us off the cliff. I mean, we're already off the cliff. That's the point. We're not even going towards the cliff. You know, somebody said to me yesterday, if we don't watch out, we're going to turn into a third world nation. And I was like, dude, we are already here. We are a third world nation. We are a banana republic. We do not have elections. There's poverty. Child poverty is among the worst in the first world. Childhood cancer, the number one killer of children in our country, childhood cancer. And people are going, huh, that's interesting. I'm just dumbfounded by it all. So I think this is why I'm on the radio, because really, we are in an urgent state and we need every brain to get active.
So I'm in a place between both of you guys where I believe that we're in the middle of a collapse, but I am hopeful, like you, Lonnie, that there are solutions that maybe haven't even been imagined yet. And I really believe, I'm a firm believer in imagination, in positive, you know, imagining positive outcomes, you know? But the truth is that these poisons were invented in the last 100 years, and they are rampant. And the problem with nukes specifically is that we keep making them. We keep making them. We have no way to dispose it. We hardly can store the waste, and yet they keep making them. And, you know, Portland, I can't remember when it was. Miriam could let me say the date, but there was a time, I'm going to say in the 80s, that Oregon declared themselves a nuke-free state.
That's right.
And the voters made that happen, and they took down reactors, and they made this big show about it, and yet the schools, OSU, has a whole nuclear program the entire time, and we have, like, the leading in nuclear medical science research going on here.
It's also
A lot of the nuclear lies come out of Oregon State University. A lot. The banana story that there's no more radiation from Fukushima came right from Catherine Higley at OSU.
Right. Yes. And Oregon is a nuke-free state. And I can't remember what the date was that Peter and those guys changed. Do you know, Miriam, when that was?
It was Lloyd Marbette, and I'm not sure if it was as late as 93. But the fact is, we are still supposedly by the people, a nuke-free state. And yet, Reed has its nuclear reactor. OSU is making small modular reactors. And, you know, it's all part of the lie.
They're moving on. Let's don't talk about the reality. It's like, let's don't talk about, you know, the fact that the atmosphere, everything is collapsing. We were talking about this before the show in Florida. I read an article this morning that said they're trying to figure out why they have the red tide right off of Tampa Bay, but there is no mention of the sinkhole pouring radioactive material into the drinking water and into the ocean, the Atlantic out there. I mean, we are polluting. It's almost as if there is a blanket secrecy. You know, the 90% rule is firm. deny radiation causes harm, and only report 10% of the harm it causes. That's really what the 90% rule says. And, you know, I mean, a lot of people will say, well, then if it's that bad, why do we face it? Why do we want to talk about it? And I mean, my thing is we need to stop. We need to stop all nukes now. Unequivocally, there is no in-between with nuclear energy or industry or anything nuclear. We need to just stop, and we need to force corporations out of science, which is what's happened with the scientists that are too frightened to talk.
Right. Right, because they get these huge grants, this money that allows them to do something, maybe a part of what they really want to do, but then the rest of them are getting bought out to do the things that, you know, and find the answers that they want to have reported. I mean, we see it all over with the GMO foods, too, you know. This, for me, this is such an obvious thing, and yet I have conversations with friends who tell me I'm a conspiratist. And there was a gentleman who, a professor out of the University of Oregon, his name is Nicholas Lugee, or L-O-U-G-E-E, and he did this huge study in America about how board of directors of different organizations cross and serve on multiple boards. And it's this beautiful industrial complex that he has proven that is around the world, where, you know, the board of the TEMCO Fukushima has a member who serves at the university, and, you know, it's like this web of people who are across, they have their hands in both pockets.
Yeah, they cross-pollinate in boardrooms.
Yeah, they cross-pollinate in boardrooms, and, you know, I work in nonprofits, and I was just thinking last night, you know, gosh, can I really do more? You know, I'm already doing I'm working on two boards, No Nukes being one of them, and I really want to devote my time to No Nukes. So I said to myself, I have to stop doing some of these other things, because when you go to these board meetings, you know, you do a board meeting a month, and then you do certain activities with committees, you know, and then you meet people, and then they ask you to come and work on a board that of a nonprofit that they're working on. You know, so it's very common in the nonprofit business to work with several different organizations. And why wouldn't they be doing that too? You know what I mean? Like, and for people to say that it's conspiracy is just asinine. It's so obvious. It's so obvious to me how much the information is mutated and molested, honestly. We're so misinformed. And people don't question it. They're afraid to question it. They're afraid to speak out to their neighbors and say, you know, I was afraid. I'm not going to speak by myself. I get afraid. I don't want people to know that I'm a nuke activist, because in the Trace Cities, that was a bad word. I was a bad person.
Wow.
Even though I was trying to protect people. I consider myself a protector. And I really like that the pipeline at Standing Rock is declaring themselves water protectors. They're not protesters.
Right.
For some reason, being a protester is like you're anti-American and, you know, a conspiratist and you're crazy, you know. It's back to that media spin, this corporate media spin that these people are bad. Protesters aren't bad for the most part. You know, it depends on what they're protesting. But they have they're genuinely usually really care about the issues is what they're doing. And then this is the only voice they have.
You know, that's what we should call ourselves, not anti-nuke activists, but earth protectors.
Yeah, we are.
I mean, that's really what the change is.
Yeah, this waste is going to be here for thousands of years. It's that's why it's so easy to not care. Because you're like, oh, well, nothing will happen in my lifetime. It's going to be here forever, and so I don't care, you know. And
well,
people don't realize that.
I have a different perspective now on the waste.
Okay.
Taking it back to our extinction event. The way that I'm hearing it and seeing it now is that we think that the waste is going to be here for thousands of years. If the climate was in a norm that was like now in 1,000 years, then sure, but that's not going to be the case. And as soon as these methane eruptions start to really kick in, like massively, and everything heats up massively, well, there's not going to be water to take care of any of that waste anyway. So I see it as all of that waste is at some point going to fucking burn. And we won't be here for it. I don't think we'll be here for it. Maybe for part of it, but not necessarily all of it. I have no idea about that part. But it can't exist without the water that it needs, without it burning. You know what I mean? So, yeah. Thank God
for reality that people can't fathom, Miriam. People can't even fathom that there could be an earthquake that could wreck a reactor, or a flood, or a wildfire. People don't understand how nature threatens the containment, or the supposedly containment of waste. And much less, I mean, I think about the government. What happens to our government? What if we go into a civil war? Who's going to take care of these nuclear waste sites? You know, are they just going to abandon them? Who wants to pay this? You know, we don't think, we're so stuck in thinking that our present and current situation is going to be like this forever for every generation. It's so hard for humans to get out of their head and see how situational our reality really is and how quickly it can change.
Well, it has changed. The number one killer of children in our country is brain cancer. And people that's an interesting little factoid. I can't get that out of my head. I have three grandchildren. Now, I know, statistically speaking, one of my grandchildren is, at the very least, will be affected 100% by the nuclear pollution that is enveloping our planet right now. And it is enveloping our planet. They have gone all in on nuclear. That's why Clinton is all in. That's why they're all going to be all in, and they're all going to ignore it, because they know the fucking pitchforks will come out if they tell us the truth.
I mean, well, I think that's for their campaigns. I'm convinced that the nuclear power is science, you know, is what's paying for our presidential campaigns. You know, that there's so much money vested.
Yeah.
And sadly, even Obama, Illinois has the most private nuclear reactors than any other state in the country, you know, and we're so invested in nuclear power. It's frightening.
Yeah. It is, actually. It is really frightening. And it's not just the nuclear power. We're invested in nuclear pollution. That's really what we've invested in. I recently, I put up some YouTube videos about this, and it's my dumbassery showing itself all over again. I've been doing this for a year, and in my head, when I saw the Native Americans protesting in D.C., I thought they were protesting against the uranium tailings that's been dumped on their lands that's causing genetic diseases and cancer. No, it's far, far, far worse. The uranium tailings are at least registered, tracked, and the government knows where they're at. What the government is not talking about is abandoned uranium mines. They estimate 15,000, but they really have no idea how many there are, because uranium mining was opened and licensed just like any other mine. So when they left it, they could just leave it. And they left over 15,000 uranium mines open all over the Southwest. It is a crime against humanity, and they know it's a crime against humanity.
Well, again, that goes back to this little lack of accountability. This is our fault, because we're not holding people accountable.
But
as a community, we need to come together.
Yeah, but you know what this is? This really speaks to the Nazism that's going on. Everybody is afraid. I mean, everyone in this country is afraid. How few of us actually speak out? They're all afraid of losing their jobs, losing their members of their church. I've lost friends. People call me a conspiracy theorist. I mean,
right.
I get name called and people look at me like I'm some lunatic when I spend lots of hours researching, learning scientific names, twisting my non-scientific brain into understanding stuff. I don't really want to have to comprehend. I'd rather be painting. I mean, I got stuff I want to do, but you know what? It's more important for me to understand what is killing this planet than for me to paint a picture. That's how I feel.
I feel like it's a responsibility.
Would say I should paint the picture, huh, Mimi?
Well, you know, it's human. We are all collectively killing the planet. Our bodies are killing the planet. Everything that we do kills the planet. It's just exponentially worse now than it's ever been. And yeah, man, I don't even have words sometimes. I am a lunatic, and I'm okay with being a lunatic, because if being what someone else who is not a lunatic is, I don't want to be that. So I'm cool over here in Lunaticville.
You know? Well, I've always said I've never met a sane person yet. You know, I think everybody is a little bit crazy and a little bit glitchy, but I think that more people need to be like Lonnie and push themselves to not do exactly what they want to do, like painting. I mean, I'm sure that we all need to take a break, but the time is now. The time is now. And you know, we could, I disagree with you, Miriam, because I don't think that humans are bad for the earth. I think that we were supposed to be able to live in earth, you know, like other animals and butterflies and whatever, and it got, you know, out of control. We're out of control, and a lot of this is because there's no accountability. People just, you know, our culture is that you just consume, consume, consume. You don't think about giving back. You don't be part of the environment. You know, to me, those are important things, and to the point now where we're so, we're machines. We're like robots, and we don't even care about the trees. We don't care about the ocean. We don't care about the water. We don't care about the things that sustain us anymore. And that's where humans are really doing the most damage, and that they think that the money, they're after the money, because that's how they get their food and where they live. But they don't realize they can't eat the money. They can't breathe the money. The money maybe is helping them in that one moment, but across the big picture of the whole world, we're creating a collapse. And I like to believe that the earth is bigger than what we've done to it. I'm still hopeful. That's what gets me out of bed, is that I do believe that our actions make a difference. I do believe talking to each other makes a difference. I believe it's more important that we talk to our friends in the evening about our opinions and about our feelings. That, to me, is the most productive protest, or the most productive things we can do, is be honest with each other. And just talk to one another, because it's so liberating. It's so liberating when you have friends who are like, you know what? I grew up next to a nuclear waste site, or I grew up next to a reactor, and I share these same feelings. I mean, that's when I met Miriam. I was so paranoid and so afraid to even talk out. And Miriam was the one that was like, we can't be silent. We have to talk. And it's been 5 years of Miriam shouting on the damn streets that has finally pushed me to be like, quit being quiet, you know, speak out. We all need to speak out. And you can do major actions. You can go and chain yourself to a railroad, or you can sleep on the stairs of City Hall, or you can talk to each other and be honest about your feelings. And when people say you're a lunatic and people say you're an idiot, you don't care, because that's just their opinion. And it doesn't change the way you really think and feel, because you're being honest. And I feel like that's our biggest problem right now. That's the... We're not honest with each other. We don't even know where the truth is. I was telling Miriam the other day, I feel like I'm living in a freaking illusion, because you can't even, we meet so many anti-nuke activists at this point. Sometimes you don't know if they're real or if they're Ponzi. Some of them feel like they're paid fools. They're not even real people, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's in this delusionment. And the best thing we can do is be our brightest selves and be honest with each other, because I feel that's the only way we're going to get past any of this, or at least make it livable for people while we get through it.
I think that's the thing, Heidi, right there. You know, how do we want to live each day that we have right now? And every day is a gift. I mean, it really is. The fact that we're still here with all of this calamity going on, and the fact that the three of us are white, well, that's part of why we're here. We have to acknowledge that as well. So I need to put that in there. Because that's as real as anything else. You know, one of the reasons that I'm here after getting stopped by the cops so many times is because I'm white. And in the honesty that we live with and that we share with other people, we have to try to expand our consciousness. How can we expand the consciousness of what we know? And so, for instance, with the cops, you know, every time I get stopped by a cop for whatever, I'll tell that cop right before the cop leaves, I appreciate the fact that you didn't kill me because I was white. What I would like you to do now is extend that right to somebody who's not white. I tell it to every cop. I have so many tickets. I mean, I'm like known for my speeding tickets, you know. It's kind of a, I just space out. I like have the Grateful Dead really loud in my car and I have no idea how fast I'm driving and I get tickets all the time. So, but that is what I say, because it's expanding our reality base, and it's expanding the reality into, it's injecting it into the killer system. The killer system meaning in this case the cops, you know. Saying, I get that I'm alive right now because I'm white, and I really do want you to expand. I want you to extend that privilege to somebody who's not white. So,
that's another thing. This is the speaking about, you know, the whole way we're off racially is really many, many, many of the places where the first environments that are poisoned are communities of color and poor communities. And those people really have no idea. Like, for example, in St. Louis, the places where the radiation is burning, and those communities that are in shot of that are all the very poor communities. And so, again, that's another intentional way to eliminate the populations. And very few of those people actively engage. Because that's a really interesting thing, but they really don't know, and this is the hardest cross to bear. Is I want people to actively engage, and yet it takes a long time for people to willing to step out. I know it took me 3 years at least before I really began to comprehend it.
Well, when you talk about economically disadvantaged people, or, you know, first off, they're working a lot. That's the problem there. You know what I mean? Like, they're working unrealistic hours and unrealistic jobs, and so just to survive. And they're not even surviving. Let's be honest, they're not even surviving. And so they don't have time to me, this is a luxury to take time out. I took time off my job this morning so I could be on the radio right now, and that's a luxury I have, you know, that most people don't have. And also about the targeting of them, this always just made me so sad about the Tri-Cities, because around Hanford is all these farms, and, you know, they did the green run where they poisoned people in the 50s to see where the radiation goes. They know where that radiation goes in the air. They didn't make those places off limits. They put farms there. And then the people who are farming those farms, they're all migrant workers. So when you come from another country, you barely speak the language, you're working your ass off in 110-degree heat, you know, in horrible conditions, you don't have time to talk to each other and look at each other and find out that you're less than 10 miles away from one of the biggest waste fields in the world, you know? They don't know. People don't know that. People who even speak English and grew up there don't even know what they're living next to. So when you're targeting economic people, disadvantaged people, that it is totally true. I mean, one day I remember Miriam went online and looked at houses and how cheap houses were in the downwind of Hanford. And I think we found a 5-acre farm for like $30,000.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And anyone who moved there probably would die of cancer, and that's probably why there's no one living there now. But it's completely downwind from Hanford.
Wow.
And how Hanford knows this since the 50s. So why wouldn't they close this property off and say it's contaminated? Well, because that hurts economics. So the whole thing of nuclear power is driven by money. So people who want money are the people who work in it and invest in it and believe in it. And then the people who need money are the ones that end up living next to it and working, you know, around it and with it. And they're the ones that die. So it's an economic war. I truly believe this is an economic war.
That's actually a really good point. It is an economic war. I've often said we're in World War III, or World War II's never ended, but really it is an economic war. And really, the silencing of the masses and the millions and billions of people is deafening. I mean, think about it, what you said today was really at the heart of it, is people are living in fear at such a deep level they can't even begin to acknowledge it.
Yeah.
Astounding.
To acknowledge it is to acknowledge there's a really deep problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. And then what do you do? It's like Richie Allen says, what do you do on day two? Once you acknowledge the problem, then you have to wake up the next day and go, huh, there's something going wrong. And we're adults. What are we going to do about it?
And then there's the reality that it feels so big, like you brought up, that it feels too big that it doesn't make a difference. I mean, that is how I feel about this whole election. Honestly, I'm so twisted on this election because obviously I hate Trump, you know, and because of his pro-war, well, like for so many reasons. And then Hillary, we've had Hillary and her regime for decades. And we haven't seen progress there. It hasn't. I mean, she may be keeping Trump out, but she's not. She's really not progressive, you know. And then I love Jill Stein. I love Jill Stein. I want to vote for Jill Stein, but I'm so afraid of that third party. Where if I vote for Jill Stein, is that going to let Trump in? You know. And then it goes back to the end of the day where I feel like it's all rigged, anyways. And then it doesn't matter if anyone votes at all. You know, and so what a hopeless feeling that is. These are our leaders, and we don't have hope with our leaders, you know, yeah. Because of the proof is in the pudding,
well,
you know.
That's intentional. I mean, my own daughter begged me to vote for Hillary Clinton because she's so scared of Trump. I mean, she's like, Mom, what would you do if Trump really won? I'm like, he's not going to win. She's going to steal the election. She's like, Mom, but I really, like, really honestly, could you live with it if you didn't vote for her and Trump won? I personally said, yes, I could, because it's, to me, they're identical. I mean, they're just two sides of the same fascist coin. There's not going to be, I mean, the differences are going to be minimal. Either way, we're super screwed. I mean, it's bad. But that, again, is intentional. And here we have all the lemmings going and voting. So I'm almost thinking about not voting for the first time in my life. And that is intentional. They want us to not participate. So we're screwed either way. Like, it's a win-win for them. That's the big issue, is like the people at the bottom lose-lose, just like the efforts that's going on in Portland right now. Mimi, it's exactly, all of these things are all tied in. It's like this common thread is fear, intimidation, denial. Fear, intimidation, denial. That's the common thread. And it is really despicable. And yet, we do have children that are going to grow up that need us to be adults. And at least, even if we fail, we got to go down swinging. That's just all there is to it. I mean, even if we do have an extinction level event and nobody survives in the next 100 years, doggone it, I am not going to just say nothing and just go shopping every weekend. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, I just want to be clear that for those of us who do believe that the extinction level event is much closer than farther, none of us are saying go shopping. I just want to be clear.
Extinction level event is not close. It's here. That's the thing people need to get. The urgency is now. It is happening. We have dead whales, dead seals. Billy, what do you think our food supply will look like when there's no more fish, folks? The fish. I mean, the microorganisms in the ocean.
I get a kick, Lonnie, that you say going shopping, because that used to be my tagline years ago, was everything is okay, just go shopping. Because when you're in the Tri-Cities, everyone gets paid. When you work at Hanford, you get paid a lot of money. And there's every store you can think of there. And everyone, that is what everyone does. They go shopping, and everyone's shopping all the time. And it used to drive me crazy on how, like, an economic machine, what an economic machine the Tri-Cities was, and what, you know, here we were in a recession everywhere else in the nation, but Tri-Cities was doing great. Tri-Cities was doing awesome. Housing prices were up, you know, the markets, the store, no one went out of business because all the money is getting sent there. Taxpayers' money is going there to pay this city, these three cities, full of people to keep working, to keep making the mess.
Yeah, that is exactly right. I mean, that's exactly what they do, too. That is exactly what they do.
It's a $2 million a day. $2 million a day of taxpayer money goes to Hanford, just Hanford, that one site. And I don't even know how many waste sites there are in the United States. Hundreds. $2 million a day going to Hanford to try to clean it up. For 20 years, they worked to build a vitrification plant that was proven 10 years ago that it could never work. And I don't even know if they're still going ahead with the vitrification plant. Do you know, Miriam, is CGS in Hanford still have the vit plant procedures happening?
Yeah, they're moving forward with it in a way that is completely dubious. One of the plants is now recently built again. None of these will work. So they're just moving forward with a flawed design plan. Because the Senate is saying, if we continue to give you $2 billion a year, you better do something with it, you know? And so they're just moving forward with a designed plan, a flawed plan, rather than getting a new plan to do something real.
Right.
Well, it's all about denial. It's about allowing murder to continue. That's the theme. This is the weird thing. It's like the cops are at that 48 rule where they're just allowed to continue to murder. The nuclear industry, the pharmaceutical industry, the oil, the coal, every
the
major
food,
industry.
The food industry. The food. Don't forget the food. They're poisoning us too.
Yes. I mean, and this is why there is an urgent call to action across the nation. That's why we're on the radio. I mean, this conversation is really about motivating people to please figure out a way to take action, get involved in your community, because it matters. Even if we're not going to, like, solve the big problem, in the immediate 50 years, if we can improve the situation for the people that are here and for our children, I think we have an obligation to do so.
Yeah, I think we have an obligation to support each other in their lunacy right now. If you have a neighbor who is so passionate about, you know, whatever they're passionate about, stop and listen to them. Like, let's listen to each other and talk to each other and be honest with one another and try to learn from one another, because that we've changed and gone away from community, and instead of learned to be afraid of one another and to fear each other's truths. And we shouldn't be fearing each other, because we're all on this planet together. And if we're going to do anything positive at all, we have to work together to do it.
Yeah. Well, and that is the thing. We do have to work together. And it is possible for us to affect some change. You know, there was people that came together in China to stop a nuclear power plant. 1 million people showed up in the streets, and the Chinese decided not to build their nuclear power plant there. So it is possible. Yeah, it does happen. And I think that's why Guy McPherson, that's why you and I and Mimi and other activists are out there encouraging people to take action, even in the light of it looking like it's not going to work, because every little drop counts. Every bit helps. Every push forward, we can become the tsunami. That's what I think. You know what, you guys, I just noticed it's 8:58. We have 45 seconds. So I want to thank both of you for being with me. You've been listening to Lonnie Clark with the Age of Fission radio show with Mimi Gurman and Heidi Lambert of the No Nukes Northwest. You can find their Facebook page at No Nukes Northwest. Make a contribution to the farm, to the activism that's going on there if you can afford it. Soon the website will be up. Did you guys want to say anything? We have like 20 seconds.
Thank you.
And to everybody listening, really try to live with urgency. See what happens.
Yeah. Well, just live with urgency and see what happens. So put your courage feet on, you guys. Thank you for joining us. We'll talk to you Friday. Call in Friday. You can respond to everything we said here. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.